Psycho Man. Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to the Motorcycle Men Podcast. This is episode 447, and we're here in the V-Twin Cafe, sitting in the corner booth. And joining me today, I will be speaking with Pete Vorst of Compass Expeditions, and he's here to tell us all about Compass Expeditions and the various tours that they offer. Okay, but first, before we get into that, the Motorcycle Men Podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. Now, they're offering high-quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. So to learn more, get on over to ScorpionUSA.com. And Wild Ass Seats. Now, you can improve your comfort and ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. So if you're tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, go on over to wild-ass.com and get your cushion today from the real Craig Johnson, and just let him know that the Motorcycle Men Podcast sent you over. Seriously, if your butt gets tired out there on the road, try one of these cushions. You'll thank yourself. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, Tobacco Motorwear. For the best in casual riding gear for men and women, there is only one place you should be going, and that is Tobacco Motorwear. Visit them at tobaccomotorwear.com, and our listeners will get 10% off your order when you use the code MOTOMEN. Everyone here at the podcast is wearing tobacco gear, and I suggest you do the same. This is wonderful gear, and I would not ride without it. I wear them from every ride. Your safety is worth it. So get on over to tobaccomotorwear.com and get in Dave's pants. Okay, now, time for that interview with Pete Vorst of Compass Expeditions. Hello, boys and girls, and here we are in the corner booth again, and today I have with me, where exactly are you?
I am in Sydney, Australia.
Oh, you're in Sydney, okay.
Yeah, but Compass is based in Melbourne, but I'm based in Sydney, so I work remotely.
Okay, excellent. So, what we got here today, Pete Vorst from Compass Adventures, Expeditions, I'm sorry, is joining me here, and we're going to talk about some of your trips that you have, some of your tours that you offer. How you doing, Pete?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm great, man. How's the weather there?
Well, it's starting to warm up, which is fantastic. I'm a warm weather beast, so I like it when it's warm. Yeah.
Okay. Like define warm.
We're still sitting in the mid to high 20s at the moment. We had a couple of days that were sort of hitting the 30s, but we'll probably see a couple of 40 degree days over summer. So,
wow, that's a tad warm.
That's obviously Australian temperatures. you can do the conversion.
I know 40 is pretty much near 90 degrees or a little bit more, I believe. Here in the US. Yeah. So why don't you tell us who you are and your motorcycle stuff and what you do?
Well, I joined Compass about 18 months ago, almost 2 years ago.
Okay.
But I've worked in the motorcycle trade for 25 plus years. My journey in retail, you know, selling behind the spares counter. Moved into the wholesale sector for the distributor of Alpenstars and Fox Motocross gear over here. Did a bit of rider training, and then I did a five-year stint as the road test editor at Australian Motorcycle News, one of the last remaining publications over here. Been going on for 70-plus years. That's print media's pretty hectic these days. It's a bit of a dying beast.
Unfortunately.
So the workload was extremely rugged. Yeah. So the job at Compass popped up on my email, and I thought, you know what, I'd love to be involved in that because it's a great story. So here I am. I continue doing freelance road tests on the side. That's my side hustle. So my life is pretty full. I ride a lot of bikes still, and my wife does the photography, and
That's convenient.
It's very convenient. So we put various reviews and pieces out to various publications in Australia still. So, but yeah, my core thing is Compass. That's my 9-to-5 job.
Excellent. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Compass Expeditions?
Yeah, so Compass, we started back in 2007. Okay. So we've been going for almost 20 years now. The company got started in a kind of peculiar way. So our founder, Mick McDonald, he's a truck driver, found himself driving overland tour buses and trucks overseas, and he met a lady named Kathy on one of the tours that he was doing. It wasn't a Compass tour, this was pre-Compass. And Kathy had a rare neurological disease called Friedreich's ataxia. And they really hit it off, and Mick was inspired by her lust for life because she knew she didn't have a great deal of time left. So inspired was Mick that he organised with a bunch of mates to do a ride from London to Vladivostok in Russia as a charity ride for Kathy. Yeah. So they did that. They raised over $20,000 for Kathy. Mm. And that went to Kathy's foundation, the Friedreich's Ataxia Network. And we still contribute to that charity to this day, percentage of our stuff. So it was a bit of a, you know, he was really inspired by it, but the guys went back and they went to their normal jobs, and Mick went back to driving trucks and all that sort of stuff. But there was a lot of interest in what they had done. Mick was getting a lot of calls saying, "Oh, that was an amazing adventure. You should do it again, blah, blah, blah." So he thought, you know what, maybe I will. So in 2007, he kicked off his first tour in South America. And it has grown from there. And Mick calls himself the accidental businessman. He never planned on being a businessman at all, let alone a motorcycle tour company, you know, owner. But it's grown from there, and it is what we are today. And yeah, so really cool sort of backstory there.
Wow, so, that's really, really interesting.
Yeah. Jeez,
it would start like that. Yeah. Damn. Yeah, now, how many of these tours have you been on these tours? Or are you just an in-office guy?
I'm kind of the in-office guy. I'm the sales and marketing manager at Compass. But being that I do my freelance photography and videography for the bike thing, that comes in handy too. So I kicked off last year, which was my first full year with Compass. So I went to Africa on our Safari Africa tour.
Very nice.
And just purely in a capacity of filming and taking photos, fell in love with the place. So I'm actually going back next year to lead that tour. And I went to Kyrgyzstan on one of our four drive tours, which was amazing, amazing country. Actually proposed to my wife, well, my now fiance, on the side of a mountain in Kyrgyzstan. So that was a bit different.
Congratulations.
Yeah, brownie points for that one, I'd say.
Yeah.
and then pretty much hopped off the plane and went straight to our Australian Encompass tour, which heads from Darwin in the north right through the centre of Australia down to Melbourne. So I did three that year and one this year. Just one this year.
So you do get to get out and enjoy these rides.
I do get to get out, yeah. The tour that I did this year was our MotoGP tour. So we did a MotoGP here in Thailand. So we tour around northern Thailand, and then we take in the MotoGP around there.
Oh,
and being
nice.
That I'm a massive MotoGP fan, it was natural for me to go. So I got to go on that one as well. So, yeah, fantastic.
Man. Now, do you guys add routes, new tours and new routes every year, or did you just stick with the same ones you have?
I wouldn't say it's every year, but Generally, it is. Yeah, we try and come up with it. We're always working with new stuff. So we did add a couple of new tours last year, a US tour from Vegas to Vegas.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so that's had a mixed response for obvious reasons from some people. Yeah. But that's there, and we brought out our Norway, Wonders of Norway tour, which takes in Germany, nice Denmark, and Norway, which is amazing. We had the first running of that just about a month ago. So, yeah, that was amazing. So I wouldn't say they're brand new every year, and there's some of them that have been coming along, you know, for quite a few years now. Our Patagonia Explorer tour is, you know, it's been going for sort of 10 years now, and it evolves as we need it to.
Of course.
We're always on the hunt for something new and exciting, and we're working on some stuff at the moment. So,
yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you walk us through how you guys come up with a new route, you scout it, test it, and all that. How do you go about all that?
Yeah, look, it's probably a point of difference between us and some companies in that, obviously, we start at the desk, and we use Google Maps, and we get out the old paper maps.
Yeah.
It still happens. And we have an outline of you know, our destination, where we might like to go, the points of interest, all that sort of stuff. Once that planning phase is done, then we get on the bike and we go. So none of our tours that you will go on, we haven't already done. Like, we always pre-ride or pre-drive all our tours. We never just rely on the Google Maps and all that. So we've stayed in the hotel, we've driven the routes, we've done the excursions, you know, so it's really, really intricate. It's outside my wheelhouse, so to speak, and the operations guys look after that, guys and girls. But it's extremely thorough. You know that if we take you there, we've been there before.
Okay. Right. Well, now in that case, how do you cater to the different rider skill levels, especially on the more challenging places like Premier Highway or in Patagonia?
Yep. Look, I'd preface that by saying that, again, a point of difference between Compass and some other companies is that, this sounds a little bit cliche, but we want it to be a holiday as well as an adventure. So we're not going to be spearing you through a desert or up a rock face or anything like that. We're not about hardcore riding. That's not what we do. We certainly have tours with challenging sections, like you've said, but, you know, a competent rider can handle it without too much trouble. In situations where perhaps we've got an inexperienced rider or we've got a pillion on the back who doesn't want to go through those challenging sections, all our tours are supported. There's a support vehicle in tow all the time. And there's the option to pop a bike on the back of a support vehicle if someone just doesn't feel confident, or, you know, pop the pillion in the passenger seat of a support vehicle, and they can go along. We've got a riding grade system that we have on our website that can give you a bit of an idea, you know, what sort of skill level, I guess. It's obviously difficult to equate that to everybody, you know, because everyone's impression of how they ride can be different.
Sure.
As I'm sure you can appreciate. To know that, you know, it's not hardcore enduro off-roady crazy stuff. We want you to see the place and not be just so dazzled by the danger in front of you that you don't even notice the amazing landscapes that you're going through, you know.
Right.
So we do what we can to help when it's needed, encourage when we need it, and
Well, do the riders know in advance before they book what the grade level is of a particular ride they might want to go on?
Yeah, so as I said, there's a rider grading system on the tour pages, each tour page, and that'll give you an idea of, you know, how difficult that particular tour is. So you might have a grade one, which is one of our road-based tours. You know, so Spain, Portugal, Morocco tour that we do, it's 100% sealed, essentially. We call it 99% sealed and 1% dirt, but that's just to allow for roadworks and things like that. It's essentially 100% sealed. So that would be a grade one. And, you know, anyone with half a clue on how to ride a motorcycle will have no problems with that at all.
You would hope anyway.
Yes. And then you'll have placed certain tours in Patagonia, certainly in Africa, where there's a little bit of sand on some of the sections. Mm-hmm. It's not deep sand by any means. That might be a grade four, you know, where it's a little bit more challenging. Something that we do that's a little bit different too is we do our major expeditions. So these are, say, Ultimate Africa, which is 85 days.
Wow, 85 Ultimate, days.
Yeah, Ultimate wow. South America, which is 100 days.
What?
So that presents a whole bunch of challenges as well, just because you're on the bike for so long, you know, and the terrain can vary through a country or through various countries so much. It's hard to put a rider grade on that, but I would suggest to a client that's interested in one of our major expeditions that they perhaps come on one of our normal tours first and then look at a major expedition, because it's a serious undertaking with, you know, a serious sense of achievement at the end of it, but you know.
But the logistics on a 100-day tour must be insane.
Massive, and you know, it's something that really interested me, and I talked to the operations team about it a lot and get quite enthused about it. I don't know if you saw the Charlie Borman series.
Yes, I did.
Ewan McGregor.
Yes.
As a motorcyclist. Total motorcycle head. One of the things I really loved about that show was when they were preparing to go on the journey, collecting all the things and getting ready for it and all that sort of stuff. So I'm always sort of peeking into the operations guys and seeing what they're doing. And the sheer logistics of you know, getting, you know, 15 people from one country through seven over 100 days is just massive, from bike transport to just everything, to repairs, to stocking of, you know, the support vehicle, you know.
Oh, plus you got mental health to a point. You got your border crossings, you've got all the, I guess, your carnets you have to have for everything.
Absolutely.
Oh my god. And lodging, I have to imagine, there's something like a 100-day tour. You're not staying in guest houses, or you're camping? What are you doing in something like that?
No, so we sort of sit at the premium end of the market, all of our tours, including our expedition. So we don't camp. We're not, you know, eating from rubbish bins on the side of the road or anything like that. It's you know, you stay in. Well, that'd be a unique point of difference, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah.
Yeah.
It might hurt your bottom line, but...
Yeah, could do. So we tend to stay in 3 or 4 star accommodation.
All right,
that
is good.
Obviously depends on the country that you're in. So somewhere like, you know, South America or Kyrgyzstan or Mongolia, you might be staying in a dirt camp one night, so you get that really authentic, you know, experience. But... obviously, it's not 4 stars.
No,
it's, you're staying in a goatskin tent, you know. So
4 stars. I guess you're just comparing yurts at that point.
Yes.
This is a 3-star yurt.
Along that whole 100 days, you're staying in excellent accommodation. I'll say that much.
I guess at the end of that 100 days, you're pretty much ready to go home.
I think that desire to go home probably happens in the earlier part of that expedition.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Before you get your mojo on, you know, you're 2 weeks in and you're like, maybe I shouldn't be here, and it's just rained and there's crazy traffic going through, you know, Thailand or something like that. And you're just like, oh, wow, what am I doing here and all that sort of stuff. But I haven't had the opportunity to go on a major expedition. They're never going to let me out of the office for that long. There's no way. But talking to some of the clients that have been on it, certainly I think they're tired, but that sense of achievement after being on the road for 100 days is just something that is, it's palpable. You know, watch the few videos and stuff like that. It's a powerful thing. It's amazing. It's an amazing adventure. Like, I mean, who does that?
100 days? That's an adventure.
Amazing.
That's just, this leads me to the next one. You've mentioned just a couple of times, but what differs Compass Expeditions from the other motorcycle travel companies? Be it logistics, culture, or whatever.
Yeah, I think certainly that the level of accommodation and the level of food that we provide, because, look, I don't want to put anyone off coming on one of our tours, but there's a tendency to get fat sometimes. Because
that's a problem, right?
some of the food's pretty good.
Quite the opposite, because most of the times you hear when people go on tours like this, they lose weight because they're on the bike so much and it's exerting and they're really like exercise, right? You're saying people are getting fat on your tours, well, maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Well, might be a slight exaggeration, but okay, it depends on what tour you're in, certainly. But I when I was in Thailand, we gorged like pigs. The food was amazing, and we just ate way too much. And look, with most of our tours, we try and get away a reasonable time in the morning, sort of 8 o'clock, and we try and get into the motel, you know, mid-afternoon, so you got time to kick it by the pool and have good food and have a few drinks and stuff like that. So certainly the food, the level of accommodation, especially places like Africa or Thailand and all that, it's just amazing. I was blown away with some of the
Europe places. Must be amazing. Europe must be absolutely amazing. I'm sure there's a lot of weight gain on that route. But, you know, the 100-day trip, I guess it's a little balance of both. You're gaining weight and you're losing weight.
I reckon you'd probably lose a little bit of weight on one of those 100-day tours because you just don't stop. You just don't stop. You know, it's with that said, you do have a few rest days here and there. Like, so we'll stay at a major town for for a few days so you can look around and do all that sort of stuff. But bringing it back a little bit, food accommodation, that dedication to making sure the route has been researched thoroughly, both in person and online. Culture-wise, look, it's really hard to put it into words, the culture that happens, and it's something that was a little bit new to me and perhaps surprising when I joined, is that some of the clients that we've got have been on 6, 7, 8 tours with us.
Really?
You know?
Oh, that's amazing.
And it's there's a dedication to the company, a real family sort of sense to it. And I think the Jerry, who's one of the directors, Mick, who was the founder, who's now left us to retire, and certainly the new director are really, you know, that's a very, very important thing for them, is that sense of family, that sense of commitment to, you know, that foundation still. You know, they're doing it for other reasons than just to make a buck, which is obviously they're still doing it to make a buck.
Of course.
But
do you know, off the top of your head, well, maybe you can just tell me, how many tours does Compass offer?
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure the exact number. I mean, we do multiple tours on most continents. We have a tour in all continents apart from Antarctica. Maybe we'll be able to work out how to get some tires that'll work there, but I don't think so. You know, we've got 4 or 5 tours in South America. We've got 3 tours in Africa, plus a major expedition. You know, we go to Japan, Norway, obviously, Europe. Yeah, so there's I don't know. I should have looked that up. That was a fail on my part. But yeah, I don't know the exact number, and it's always fluctuating. So
yeah,
something like Spain, Portugal, Morocco, or Rising Sun, now Tour of Japan. Last year, the demand was so high that we actually ran three Spain, Portugal, Morocco tours back to back.
Oh, wow.
And two Rising Sun tours. So if we fill a tour and there's just big demand for it, we'll try and put on another one as long as we can get the crew lined up and the accommodation. Yeah. More difficult in places like Africa because the accommodation is really at a premium there. It's a really hot spot to travel at the moment.
Oh, really? Is it really?
Yeah, so it can be a little bit more difficult.
Okay. Do you have a favorite tour?
At this point in time, I would have to... Safari Africa, I think. Yeah. And look, to be quite honest, we do a tour in South America called Trail of the Incas, which visits Machu Picchu and...
Really,
it just goes to some amazing places, and that was that's my bucket list trip, and that's the one I wanted to go on first. And without sounding like a spoiled brat, the bosses said, "Oh, look, do you want to go and do Safari Africa and shoot it, and you know, take photos and video?" And I said, "Yes, of course," but I really wanted to go on Trail of the Incas. And I don't want to sound like I'm getting all warm and fuzzy here, but I don't know if it's got something to do with the whole cradle of mankind thing or something like that. I'm not sure, but that something about Africa really, really got into me, and it affected me in a strange sort of way. South Africa was amazing, beautiful, but Namibia, through the desert regions of Namibia.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about that.
Just amazing. Amazing and breathtaking in every way you can imagine. And you wouldn't think that this barren moonscape of sand and rock could be beautiful, but it is.
Oh.
It just is. It's just stunning. I believe they shot some of the Star Wars footage through Namibia.
Yeah, that's right. They did, didn't they? Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
You know, there's something about the desert to me that's so appealing. I love anything the desert. I want to be there, you know.
Yeah,
it's I can completely understand it. Watching Charlie and you and when they did the Long Way Down and they found themselves during that, amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yep.
Have you heard any like stories or moments from some of your travelers that kind of like really highlight what you guys are all about?
That's a tough one. Because there's a lot of stories. There's so many stories, especially when we're talking the expeditions. You know, there's a million stories in a 100-day trip. I guess one for me would be on Australia Encompassed last year, our Darwin to Melbourne thing. I met a lovely gentleman named George who we've now become very close friends, and George was fairly new to motorcycling, and he was from the UK. He's quite daunted by riding an R1250 GS Beamer, the vastness of Australia and its interior, In some of the areas, we got a lot of wind. It was very, very high winds, and he was really, really put off by that. So, I find it difficult to a little bit difficult to explain. But George was really, really grappling with how he was feeling emotionally, and he was quite down and all that sort of stuff. So, it was really, really a pleasure to work with him to get him above that and get him to the finish line, so to speak. That trip's, you know, 5,500, almost 6,000 kilometres. I'm not sure what that is in miles, I'm sorry. It's a big haul, and we got him there in the end, despite you know, all sorts of adversity. We had his bike on the support vehicle for a couple of days, but we got him back on it, and we nursed him through, and the sense of achievement at the end, he was visibly emotional at towards the end of it. George also managed to lose his wallet with 8,000 pounds in it. Why he was carrying that much money, I do not know. But he was carrying a fortune in his wallet, and he left it behind at one of the motels. So I spent a rather sleepless night on the phone to every place that we had stayed at trying to find this wallet. We finally found it, and then the ops team sort of took over, and they organised to get it picked up and then securely freighted to him, and met him in a place called Cooper Pedy, and we reunited him with his wallet. And so, look, it was a real sort of success story, and it was an absolute pleasure, firstly, to meet him, but to get him to the end and to see him ride into Melbourne after, you know, seeing him at times on the side of the road, he just wanted to go home.
And that must have been a wonderful experience for him. Oh, my gosh.
It was so good, and it's something we talk about still to this day. Although it was fairly traumatic at times for him, he now looks back on it with great fondness, and so do I.
Wow. Tell us about these star tours that you have, celebrity dates that you have.
Yeah, so I'll start with Simon Pavey. So Simon Pavey has run Dakar 10 times.
Yeah.
So he's a proper off-road legend. He runs the off-road training school in Wales, over in the UK. And we host Simon when he comes over here. So he comes over once a year, usually around early December, and he does an off-road training skills weekend. And unlike a lot of training, you know, sort of things, probably better terminology for it than that, wouldn't it? So we do the training skills on the weekend, on the Saturday and Sunday, and then we do a 5-day tour through the Victorian High Country, which is just stunning. Get to actually put those skills to the test and practice what you've learned while still having Simon and his crew with you to help you along, you know, often. And perhaps you've done training yourself where you go and do the training day and then you're left to your own devices to go and practice it. So to have that coaching and then to go and put it into practice for 5 days with the coaches alongside you is pretty special. There was last year, it was fantastic. I went there just to take photos and video. But when on the first morning you sort of see all these people riding in on their big adventure bikes, teetering around, scared of the first bit of dirt they saw, you know, they were a bit tentative. You know, a lot of them are quite new to adventure bikes, and that's why they were seeking the training to better themselves. And then I remember after, as we broke for lunch, and you're allowed to have a bit of free time, and there was just roost flying everywhere. You know, they were just gone, you know. The difference in confidence was just amazing. And I mean, as you know, and I'm sure your listeners know, it's, you know, confidence up here, that's a massive part of what we do.
Oh, yeah.
The confidence it instills is fantastic. It was really cool. So, I'll be back this year to take some more photos and videos. We've got another bunch of people wanting to come and upskill, so I'm looking forward to that one. It'll be good.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Nice.
And our other one and our most famous and one of our most popular tours is we host Charlie Borman when he comes down under. So we do Charlie's tour. That travels through, starts in Melbourne, hops in on the ferry. We load all the bikes on the ferry and we head over to Tasmania, and we go for a spin around Tasmania. It's quite a small but absolutely picturesque island.
Nice.
Then we catch the ferry back and we head up through the Victorian High Country and finally finish in Sydney. So nice. Charlie Borman leads the tour. His manager and good friend, Billy, sort of runs
Billy
sort
bike
of
truck. Pack. Yes.
That's the one. Billy is a fantastic character. And then we've got, you know, the Compass support vehicle with a couple of crew in there as well in case someone needs a rest or something like that. So, yeah, fantastic tour. As I said, one of our most popular. And when I first met Charlie, I didn't know what to expect, you know. It was sort of movie-ish star sort of guy. I thought he'd be, you know, a bit high and mighty, but he's... He's so just
a regular guy.
Yeah, he was, and he loves to have a chat, and he loves to have a beer, and he loves to just talk, and our clients love him, and we love him, and it's a fantastic tour and a fantastic experience, and people keep coming back, so we have people that have done the tour multiple times, that just they love it. So We actually used to do a tour through Africa as well with Charlie.
Oh, yeah. He was running tours with Billy down in South Africa for a while, and then he stopped doing it.
For some of those, we ran the tours for him on his behalf, the same as we do here. Unfortunately, he had a bit of an accident and smashed his legs up.
I remember that.
So we had to ferry him out of there, and it's sort of been put on the back burner a little bit at the moment. But we're in discussions about doing something a little bit different with Charlie because it's a pleasure working with him, and the clients really really love it. So yeah,
that's excellent. With your tours, on average, how many people do you usually have coming on your tours? I know it's going to vary depending upon the tour itself.
It does,
but on a ballpark average, what do you get?
Yeah, so I think you'd probably say the average is around 15, perhaps.
Really?
Across all.
Wow.
Something like the Thailand GP tour that I'm running in February next year. We've got 20 people booked on that.
Really? Wow.
And we take certain measures to cater for that. So we usually split into two groups and we'll have two leaders. And it's not official policy, Ted, but we sort of break into a fast and slow group for those that want to maybe try and settle that record at the front. Yeah, you know, they can have a bit of a play
here and there.
Because there's some amazing roads through northern Thailand. They're just...
That's a long ride too. That is a long ride.
Yeah. So that's the extreme. Sort of 20. Something like Mongolia or Kyrgyzstan, we tend to get lower numbers on that. So that can be between 6 to 10 people. There's a lot more off road there. We tend to use smaller bikes for that sort of stuff. Right. It's by no means still not crazy enduro stuff, but it is a little bit more challenging, especially when it rains or there's inclement weather. So, so just depends on the tour. Road-based tours, we tend to run higher numbers. More off-road, we tend to run slightly lower ones.
Do you have a cutoff, whereas if you don't have enough people, you just don't do the tour?
That's something that was a little bit strange for me coming into Compass too, because they're very big on their commitment to their dates. So I reckon over the last 18 months, almost 2 years, I've seen maybe 3 tours cancelled.
Really? And that's, is that because of attendance or, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's been other tours that have run with very few people on them, and we still run them. So you know, we really try to avoid that disappointment, and have that stability and that assurance that, you know, if you book on, it's going to run. Look, I mean, we've been doing this for a long time. So even if we did cancel a tour, you know, it's you're going to get your money back and all that sort of stuff. But there's no worries there. But yeah, they certainly go above and beyond to keep the tour going.
Okay, let's talk motorcycles now. What kind of bikes do you typically use for your tours? And do you, I imagine you have different bikes for different regions.
Yeah, we do. Look, the BMW range, as in F750 or 800 now, the 850 and the 1250, obviously progressing to the newer models, are the most popular. They're the ones that we get requested for the most. So you'll get that in the majority of tours. They'll be available. As I touched on before, places like Mongolia and Kyrgyzstan, we tend to run single cylinder stuff, DR650s, XT600s, just more maneuverable, lighter, easy to get along with. There's not a lot of highway miles, so there's just no need for a big capacity bike. Right. There is some instances where we've got a couple of Africa Twin 750s hanging around, the older model. We've still got them hanging around, in they're always in good nick, but if someone does want a, you know, a large capacity bike, twin cylinder, there's that option as well. Something like the Charlie Tour or Spain, Portugal, Morocco, there's a little bit more selection, and certainly Japan, there's a wide variety, you know, with all the manufacturers there, you can have a good pick of what you want there, anything from a Ducati V4S Multistrada to, you know, to a NX500 Honda. So there's a great variety of stuff there. A lot of our tours too, we also have the option of we have BYO packages as well, so you can bring your own bike.
Oh, wow. Okay. Do you get many people doing that?
We get a few, not a great deal on our regular tours. However, on the expeditions, quite a lot, the majority.
Really?
And that's your shipment from a major port to the start of the expedition is included in the package price.
Oh, really?
So,
oh, wow, that's
good.
Yeah,
so because it's just, it's cheaper for you to bring your bike via a container for a 100-day tour than it is to hire a motorcycle for 100 days. It just is.
Yeah,
so
I can see how.
It's, yeah, and look, it's, to be on your own bike when you're doing a 100-day stint is good.
Yeah.
So, for our Australian tours, we get a few people bringing their own bikes for the same Simon Pavey tour or the Charlie tour. Yeah, we get a bit of that, so.
All right. So you don't actually have a fleet of bikes that you use. Do you get these from, I guess, rental companies or dealerships wherever the tours are?
Yeah, generally we've got suppliers that we've been working with for many years that will supply the bikes for us. We did have a fleet pre-COVID. But COVID shut Compass down. We sold everything off. It was only, Gary and Mick, the original guys, decided, okay, we can't do anything here. We have to shut down. Compass is done after 13 years. But then Ben and Brent, the new directors, came in and said, no, you can't let this go. But unfortunately, our bike fleet went with it during COVID. So it's certainly something that we're looking at to put a fleet on. More than likely, that will just be for Australia and our tours here, because our suppliers, you know, especially in South America and Africa, we've been working with for so long, and they're so reliable. They have such good quality bikes. It makes sense just to continue to use them. And the support they give us is just phenomenal, especially in South America.
That's good. Well, what do you do about maintenance issues or emergencies when you're in these remote areas? What do you do?
Again, we've got the support vehicle, so that's usually stocked with bits and pieces that we'll need. And worst case scenario, we'll put bikes on the back of the truck, depending on what vehicle we have for that particular tour. Or in the case of something like Africa, we've got a bike trailer, enclosed bike trailer that's towed along by the support vehicle. So we can pop a bike in there and get it to the nearest place to be repaired. As I said, our bike supplier in Africa and South America are quite extraordinary people. They're just amazing. So we had, on Safari Africa last year, I had a gentleman who couldn't quite work out how to take his foot off the back brake and cooked it to the point where the thing was in flames when I pulled up. And it actually, the brake caliper was binded to the disc. You couldn't move the thing, you know. So so we had to put the bike on the trailer because we couldn't get it to move. It had welded itself together. Wow. But, you know, they're amazing, our supplier over there, and they drove, you know, we were a good 500 k's or kilometers from where we were based, and they drove another bike out, got him back on the road, and took the other one back to repair it. So they're really quite amazing like that. So yeah,
that's pretty cool. Hey, So I see that you offer four-wheel drive tours as well. So
tell us
a little about that and how that works.
Yeah, so this is fairly new. We kicked it off last year with our first tour in Kyrgyzstan, which was the one that I jumped on. And look, it takes a similar formula to what we've had success with already. So, you know, we researched the routes the same, the quality of accommodation and all that we pride ourselves on. I guess the point of difference is... often when you go overseas and you go on a small group tour, you're loaded into some modified truck or bus with, you know, 30 other people that have sweated profusely through the day and been petting animals. and often those large vehicles can't get into, you know, smaller places or, those more remote locations. So, again, with the four-wheel drive, it's similar to the bikes in that it's not extreme four-wheel driving.
Right.
We just use those vehicles because they're smaller and we can get into places that those coaches, buses and stuff can't get to. So it's self-drive, if you like. So you, when you buy a package, you hire a Hilux or something like that, and you drive the four-wheel drive. There's a tour leader and there's a support vehicle, and you drive along and sightsee and do your own thing. We don't pile a bunch of strangers into the car with you. So when you hire that car, that four-wheel drive, that's your car.
That's your vehicle.
So
if
you've got other passengers with you, yes, pile them in, but you're not going to get a stranger stuck in there with them. So it's your vehicle. You follow along.
Okay.
The group can be quite stretched out. So, you know, you kind of go at your pace. If you want to pull up and take a photo, do it. The days tend to be a little bit shorter than the bike stuff just because we can't travel as fast in the cars as we can on the bikes. But, yeah, it keeps those core elements of great food, great accommodation, great service. And, yeah, it's just it's a different way to do the small group tour thing without being on a stinky coach.
You get a lot of people for those?
It's certainly growing. Yeah, as I said, we just kicked it off last year. So, our schedule for the end of the year is really quite full and filling up really fast. We've got a couple of standout tours already. We do a Back Roads of Vietnam tour, which is we tour around Vietnam actually in some old World War II style Willys Jeeps. really unique sort of experience there. So that ran earlier this year for the first time, and it was a really big success. So so that South America, which is kind of our signature destination, and Africa ran just a couple of months ago, Cape to Vic Falls tour, and that was really well received. So
wow.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's really some interesting stuff, and I'm really, really fascinated by a lot of these things. How can people learn more about Compass Expeditions?
Well, our website's a place to go to, so www.compassexpeditions.com. There's abundance of information there about all the tours.
Yes,
it's got day-by-day itineraries. But there's also, you know, a contact link there, so people can can send in questions, all that sort of stuff, and usually they'll come to me first and foremost. And if you've got questions, send a, you know, just send an inquiry via the link, the contact us link there, and I'll usually email or contact them, and we can set up a private tour consultation, so they can just fire any questions they've got about a particular tour. They can just fire it at me, and we can answer it in real time and learn more about the nuts and bolts of it. And then probably the other way is via our newsletter. So if you hop on the website, you can sign up to our newsletter, and you know, we don't bombard you. It's not a daily thing. We send out generally about 2 emails a month, so it's okay. You know, you're not going to get bombarded, but we update everyone there with new tours that we're putting on, or things that have changed, or tours that are almost closed, and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, so it's a good way to stay up to date with what's happening in the world of Compass.
Excellent. Any closing words for anyone considering going on one of these big adventures, like one of the ones your tours, you guys offer?
Okay, I'm going to get warm and fuzzy again here and say that there's an excitement when you see the tour that you're going to do. There's an excitement when you're on the tour. But for me, being fairly new, as I said, there was times when I was on tour in certain places where I'd be, you know, looking at some amazing landscape, overlooking a pool in Namibia and something that looked like a castle that was an amazing palace. And that was amazing while I was there. But when I got back, just it sticks with you, you know, that experience, and it becomes even more prominent in your mind, the memory than the experience sometimes, you know. But I just say that if you're looking to ride a bike and you don't want to hurt yourself and get cartwheeling through sand dunes and stuff, and you want to actually see the world, and you want it to be a setup where you essentially bring your gear, get on a plane, turn up, and let us take care of the rest, then we're the people to come to.
Excellent.
Simple.
Damn. Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for being on a podcast. You've been a wealth of information and a great guy to talk to. I really appreciate all your input.
No, thank you for the invite. I really appreciate it. It's been fantastic.
No problem. Thank you very much. Don't go away. I want to talk to you when we're done. And but again, thank you very much for being on the show.
Cheers.
The Motorcycle Men Podcast is supporting David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. If you'd like to help and be a part of something that actually makes a difference, donate today to David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. Go to davidsdreamandbelieve.org to donate. Links will also be in the show notes, of course. And the Gold Star Ride Foundation, helping the families of fallen soldiers and making a difference in the lives of those left behind. If you'd like to be a part of a great cause and get some heartfelt miles in, get on over to goldstarride.org and learn how you can participate in the next Gold Star Ride. Hey, thanks for joining me and Pete here in the V-Twin Cafe, where he told us all about Compass Expeditions. Now, you can learn more about Compass by getting over to compassexpeditions.com. Links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the Motorcycle Men website at motomenpc.com. Hey, don't forget to get on over to the Ride with Ted YouTube channel. Watch some of the many videos I have there. And if you would please, also like and subscribe. That would be a tremendous help to the channel and, of course, to the podcast. Get your copy of my book, The Road Most Traveled, now direct from me on the Motorcycle Men website and save nearly $8. Of course, it is still available on Amazon, and you can get the audiobook on Audible. And you can still get it from me if you like. And I'll even sign it for you if you want. All right, for the rest of the Motorcycle Men team, thanks for listening, boys and girls. And remember, we say stupid crap so you don't have to. Ride safely, kids.